Let's do this, the Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Good day, David.
Yeah, it is a good day. I'm working on a little bit of a cold here, so if you hear me coughing away, that's why. Alrighty, Bruce, this is a podcast on the early days of Dave Tippett and Ken Holland, the new leadership of the Edmonton Oilers. Let's start it off with Holland, kind of some of the early moves that he's made. So we'll talk about the Joachim Nygaard and Joe Gambardella contracts, releasing Paul Coffey. And he made a comment about Andre Sekera that I found to be interesting. You just wrote about Gambardella, Bruce. What do you think of that contract?
Oh, I like it. I like the player. I think he's one of those guys that was a good bet at the time that Peter Shirelli and company signed him out of college. I've always had a bit of a soft spot for the college free agents as players that generally don't cost draft choices, often were undrafted, period. You're getting them a little bit more mature, their game a little bit more developed. They tend to be late bloomers, and Joe Gambardella is a classic example of a late bloomer, the guy that improves every year at each level of hockey that he played, dramatically improves. Like he was way better in his second year at USHL than his first year, and then he was better each and every year that he was at playing college hockey in UMass Lowell. And then in the AHL, he went from 19 points in 50 games to 48 points in 50 games, just from his first year to his second, led the team with 29 goals, led the team with 6 playoff goals, got his cup of coffee in the NHL and showed pretty well. And I mean, he showed, again, one of those guys shows the difference between the quality of the leagues. Like we earlier talked about Brad Malone, I think, at the AHL, he's a stud. At the NHL, he's just barely hanging on for all he's worth. But his game is kind of translatable because he is a bulldog. And yeah, he really loves the forecheck and causing the grief and winning the battles along the wall and then sort of taking advantage of the chaos off the turnover.
Yeah, he was the engine of that team. He was the heart, the leader of that team, on-ice leader. Mm-hmm. He was a very kind of charismatic player in a weird kind of way for someone who wasn't very fast or very big, but he was just always mucking it up, always getting it in there, always making plays and making good plays with a little bit of skill at the AHL level and just a really excellent AHL player. And, you know, we'll see, like you say, that there's obviously a difference between the AHL and the NHL. And it took him a while to get used to the AHL, but I think he's going to be a valuable NHL player for 2 or 3 years in a bottom line capacity. And I wouldn't count him out as a third liner even at this point, because he does seem to have fairly high, he's got high heart, high intensity. He's got to figure out a way to be a really useful penalty killer, really useful checker, and a gritty guy at the NHL level. And I think he's going to do all those things. And I think if they played him, he would be a better player than Milan Lucic was last year for the Oilers. Like, they would get more out of Gambardella for sure than they got out of Lucic last year. Now, that's not saying a whole lot, but Lucic was a kind of a replacement level fourth line player last year. Like, he was an okay fourth line player. Certainly had a lot of hits.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's something. And but I think Joe Gambardella would do more to help the team win if he was on the roster than Milan Lucic was. So that's what I'm hoping to see this year, is that he is and Lucic isn't. So I like the player a lot. He, in terms of scoring chances plus minus, that whole line of Malone, Patrick Russell, and Gambardella was really strong. And you know, I'm not sure that Russell's back. I'm not sure that Evan Poli's back either, Bruce, actually.
Like, yeah.
Stauffer did it, who knows, like, he's the insider, right? He works for the team, and he put out a list of the Bakersfield team, and Poli and Russell were not on that team. Mm. Although I think he's talked about Russell maybe making the Oilers in other contexts. So we'll see what happens with Patrick Russell. But Patrick Russell wasn't as good as Joe Gambardella in the playoffs. So, yeah, I like that signing.
Well, it's a low-risk signing. I mean, he was RFA, so they had rights to the guy, and they used him. They signed him basically NHL minimum. 2 years of 700 was the first report I heard. The second report was that the second year is 725. Either way, you're talking about, you know, the minimum now is 700. So, and a two-way contract, so they can send him down and save money. But I mean, even from a salary cap perspective, it could be a one-way deal at that figure. You could bury all of it in the AHL. So he's just sort of your classic tweener. And signing him, somebody was asking on Twitter, I don't get why they sign him for the second year. Well, to me, the second year is a bonus.
Yeah.
He's on your 50-man list. He's going to help, at minimum, he's going to really help your AHL team. At maximum, he's going to help your NHL team in a smaller capacity. And in between the two is probably what he's going to be, is a tweener where he does some of each like he did in this past season.
Well, what if he came up and made the fourth line and killed penalties and scored 10 goals or 11 goals? I mean,
yep. 700K, that's a steal.
Yeah, and then you're glad you have that second year because you're going to be paying a million or a million two or something like that otherwise. So that was, you want to get that second year. It's like Kara's contract from, if he had just signed the one-year deal 2 years ago, after that 11-goal season, he would have got a lot more money right away.
That's right.
Now he's not. Well, maybe we'll see what he gets, Jujhar Kara. All right, they signed, there was apparently 20 teams who are interested in Joakim Nygaard from Sweden. There was about six teams, according to Nygaard, on owners now that were really interested in him, including the Calgary Flames. So this was a really boost to Edmonton Oilers fans. You know, we lost the Spencer Foo challenge. Anytime a coveted, and it doesn't mean this player is going to be an NHL player, but anytime a really coveted free agent signs with the Oilers, that's the Oilers fans are always happy. I was happy. And so Nygaard is, what, 26, 27? He was the second leading scorer in the top Swedish league. Mm-hmm. And he's a smaller player, but really, 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 really fast. And that's the thing I think that made Oilers fans happier than anything was the notion that this guy is really, really, really fast. He also kills penalties. So he's going to get, I think, the assignment that Tobias Reeder had, the same opportunity that Kajula, Reeder, Ty Ratty, yes, that Puljujarvi had last year. That's going to go to Joakim Nygaard this year, and hopefully he'll do more with it than they did.
Yeah. Yeah, he's an interesting player. Say he's 26. He's played 7 years in the Swedish Hockey League, and he has the oddest thing. He's improved in his goals total each and every year that he's been in the league, and he's also improved his goals per game and his points per game each and every year that he's been in the league, like just steadily improving. And that's, again, when you talk about late bloomers, it's guys that don't stop improving as they get into their mid-20s. And both Gambardella and Nygaard, you could draw that conclusion. I mean, I haven't seen the guy play, but from his stats, you can say, well, he sure hasn't stopped growing because now he's up to 21 goals, second in the league. He led the league in even strength goals. He was fifth in the league in shots. I mean, he's a sort of a legit offensive player, and yet they're talking about his speed, his penalty killing, his ability possibly to fill in a bottom six role in the NHL. So it's not like they're setting a super high bar where they expect the guy to come in and play with McDavid. They're just getting a quality pro in the middle of his career and going to give him a look.
Again, really, a fairly
low risk.
Yeah, one-year deal. He had to sign an entry-level contract because he's 26.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So just there's no downside at all for the Oilers. And, you know, a lot of teams wanted to give this player a chance, and the Oilers got him. So good work by Ken Hall and the Oilers.
Well, good work by Gretzky.
Mm-hmm. Gretzky, like the Oilers were in on this guy. They've been working with him for a couple months now. Now Holland sealed the deal, but.
Good work by Joakim Nygaard and his camp, too, in identifying the team that needed speed and scoring on the wings. And, I mean, Edmonton just has a flashing red neon sign saying, we need all that in this team. So it's a pretty obvious choice. But they probably maximized the opportunity for their player to make an NHL impact.
So two good smaller moves by Ken Holland. Mm-hmm. Now, he said something else. It was in one of the interviews on the day that Tippett signed. He was talking about with Stauffer about which defenseman might make the team. And it was interesting. Before they hired a GM, Bruce, I was really hoping they would hire the GM while Bakersfield was still in the playoffs.
Yep.
Because I think we've seen instances in the past where coaches or managers have come in and they've underestimated. Mm-hmm. We saw those with Dallas Eakins, kind of underestimated the players on the AHL team and overlooked them, and to the Oilers, to the detriment of the organization. So it was really great. Holland got in there. You got to see these guys in big games and get a real sense of them. And I think that really helped, probably helped Gambardella get a contract. And and I think it helped some of these defensemen. So he was, said he was down in there and he saw Lagus and Bear, Jones and Bouchard. Mm-hmm. And he was asked, you know, he was saying that he thinks one of them is going to make the Oilers out of camp and maybe two. And he says, here's the quote from Holland. I always reflect back on my Detroit days. You know, you look at Sekera, who's a really good veteran. I look at the impact that Nicholas Cronwall had Dennis Cholowski, had on Philip Hronek. Sekera can have that role. You got to have some veteran, well-respected people in the locker room that mentor those young kids. So certainly you want to have youth, but you need to have some of those veterans there, certainly on the back end, that they can mentor them. I think we've got a lot of those different options in the organization we have to sort out in the next couple months. Bruce, what did you make of that comment?
Well, it's kind of a tell that he mentioned Sekera by name and he didn't mention Chris Russell by name, because obviously those are the two senior citizens on the back end for the Oilers, you know, with 700 or 800 games of NHL experience, 30 years old, been around the block and a few different cities. So maybe Sekera has the leg up. He's certainly the more accomplished puck mover of the two. He does come at the pricier end of the spectrum between the two, and he's the one that, of course, is coming off two injury-plagued years. But Sekera at 100%, I think, is a better D-man than Chris Russell at 100%. Whether it's 1.5 million better, I don't know. But I understand Holland would say, I would maybe want to move one, but not both of these players.
Yeah, I think Sekera is 1.5 million better than Chris Russell when they're both at their best. Mm-hmm. Sekera, I never thought he was going to come back after two major injuries. He's 30. He's going to be 33 in a few days, but he did. And he was strong in a third pairing role for the Oilers in soft minutes. And then he was really strong for Slovakia, playing first pairing minutes in the World Championships. He looked fast to me when he was playing. He looked like he was back at his old speed, and he's a really smart, good player with the puck. Plays that JC Tremblay game, Bruce, fairly well. Does Mr.
Anderson. I remember JC Tremblay well.
JC superstar. Great French Canadian player in the WHA and for the Montreal Canadiens.
When I was a kid, I absolutely hated him. I hated the Habs, and for whatever reason, he was a focal point for my hatred. And then when he left the Habs and joined the Quebec Nordiques and started to come to town, I started to love the guy. I loved his game, and his just so clever with the puck, and, you know, make the puck do the work, make it look like he was playing in the old rocking chair, as Low Tide would put it, and get that puck, you know, on his stick, off his stick, going up the ice, no problem. And that's when Sekera is rolling. That's what his game's about, is letting the puck do the work. And
yeah,
goodness knows Edmonton has missed that the last 2 years, that the player has been either out or coming back from
physical ailments. Really miss Andre Sekera. And it's exciting to me that he might be back and ready to go in a top four role. And I don't see buying him out. Like, you get some cap relief, but I don't think you're going to, like, you'd have about $3 million to sign up. I don't think you're going to get a better defenseman for $3 million than you have right now in Andre Sekera. They need puck moving. He's a really strong puck mover. And, you know, there's a real chance, Bruce, that the Oilers won't do a lot, at least initially on defense. They could just not do anything, essentially. And they still have one spot open. So Caleb Jones, who's ready to make the NHL and should make the NHL next year, could make the team. And it might force Benning or Russell to be the seventh defenseman. And that's a lot of money tied up in your seventh defenseman.
Yep.
But that's also really great depth to have on your defense, because you know someone's going to get hurt.
And you've already written off Brandon Manning as being one of the seven, even though he has a one-way contract for $2.25 million.
Yeah, he's not. Yeah. Sorry,
Brandon Manning. What a disaster that trade was.
I was on a roll. I was actually feeling good about the Oilers.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
So they could just do nothing. But clearly it's preferable to move Russell if you can. Now, he has 10 teams he can pick that he can be traded to.
Yep.
He can pick 10 teams that are capped out, and suddenly it gets very hard to move them.
Why would he do that?
Because he doesn't want to move. Is why.
Yeah. Well,
so you could, he can make it so it's very, if he doesn't want to move, Bruce, he's not open to it, but he might be, right? Like if he's, if they're saying, hey, Chris, we actually have you as the seventh D man this year, you're going to be in the press box. You might think, no, I'd rather play. So then, okay, I will go after all to, you know, Florida or wherever, Toronto or, you know, whatever team. And I'm just throwing those names out there randomly. So he'd be the obvious guy to move. Although I like Chris Russell. I think he's a good defense. He's like, he's in terms of performance, all of those defensemen were in the same group last year, Klefbom, Larson, Nurse, Russell at even strength. None of them were real good and they were all not very good, but you know, Russell was right in there and he had his strengths and he had his weaknesses. His weakness is the weakness of the team though, moving the puck, and they've got, he's not going to get better at it. I still had some
hopes. Probably not.
And it's, I think it's time to move him. I would rather keep him, keep Benning than him, because Benning's younger and he's a right shot. So now they might have to move Benning. They might decide to move Benning though as well. And then they'll have two spots for young guys. But I was just glad to hear that, that Ken Holland recognized Andre Sekera's quality. And it looks like Sekera is high, is in the mix for next year. Bruce, let's go to Dave Tippett. What did he say that, that got your attention?
He said, well, one thing he said is, I've been out for a couple of years. It's time to get going. He's well rested. And this is a guy who's been coaching continuously for
20 years.
Close to 20 years. Yeah, I mean, he was 14 straight years as a head coach in the NHL, where he started and finished the season. He never got let go in midseason. He never got brought on in midseason. Before that, he was assistant for 3 years. Before that, he was in the farm AHL for 3 or 4 years. And so, and then 2 years away, and now he's back in it. And they've certainly gone the veteran route. He said, there's never an excuse for not winning, which is an interesting quote from a guy who missed the playoffs the last 5 years and had a very good excuse as to why, because Arizona Coyotes were being run on a shoestring. You know, he's saying, certainly saying some of the right things.
And that reminded me of the old Scotty Bowman story, where I think Bowman's talked about the need to kind of kick away the crutches the players have for losing. Like they're always like, oh, we're back from a road trip. Like we're tired, or this is our 10th game on the road and or fifth game on the road in 7 nights and we're tired. And the job of the coach, Bowman said, was to kick away those crutches and not give them any excuses to lose. And that reminded me, that comment reminded me. And Bowman and Tippett kind of reminded me a little bit of Scotty Bowman, you know, that very self-confident man, Bruce. So he was talking about, like, he's not a defensive coach or an offensive coach. He's a coach who just tries to maximize whatever players he has to win. It's all about the winning, and he's just trying to maximize it. Like whatever team he has, he's just building a system and that ends up with a win at the end. And he said, quote, that's where I feel like, especially some of the teams in Arizona, we weren't high on talent. We were high on character. We were higher on work ethic. We worked together well, and we found a way to win a lot of hockey games. And I was thinking, oh, you really are a self-confident guy, because you didn't actually win a lot of hockey games. You did for a couple of years in Phoenix. Well, to give him credit, they his first year, 3 years in Phoenix, they made the playoffs. Each year, they went from 50 wins to 43 to 42 wins, Bruce. And then in the next year, they were 21 wins in a 48 game schedule. And then then they had 37, 24, 35, and 30 wins. They were very Oilers-like in his final 4 years there. They were a terrible team. Final 5 years, actually, they were terrible. So, but he made it sound like they had done a lot of winning, and not so much. But I did admire his confidence, and he's certainly a commanding kind of individual. You can see who's used to running an NHL hockey team. And and as Ken Holland repeatedly said, you know, there's going to be lots of, you know, the choppy water, rough waves, and you got to have a guy with a firm hand on the rudder. And God, that's got to be true. Like, you need these strong individuals. And Tippett came across, that's how he came across to me, as a very kind of strong guy.
Yeah, well, Todd McClellan and Ken Hitchcock the same. And you hope that Tippett's reputation as being a player's coach is for real, that he's going to be able to connect with these young guys. Because, you know, he's been around a long, long time. I remember Dave Tippett was captain of the Canadian Olympic team, 1984 team in Sarajevo. I mean, that's 35 years ago, David. And he'd already been around long enough that he was a captain of that club. And he became a useful checker, penalty killer, face-off guy in the NHL for a number of years. And then, of course, he's followed the grinder, becomes coach career curve. But that's a lot of years. And the question is, will he be able to connect with 22 and 25-year-old guys? The track record says probably yes. And we can just hope that that's going to be the case.
Well, he said something that a couple 22-year-old guys, 23-year-old guys are going to like, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. He was asked about how he's going to utilize them. And he talked about how much he loved them together. And they seemed to have an obvious connection. And it was interesting. Ken Hitchcock played those two guys a lot together, but he admitted, openly admitted, that he thought the Oilers would be a better team and were a better team when they were apart. Mm-hmm. And that's how it's going to trend eventually. But I think Tippett is smart. I think it's clear these two guys want to play together. It is clear that they have a real connection. They do really well together. Mm-hmm. And as a starting point, you know, I'm firmly in the camp of you need them apart to win in the playoffs. But
you get to the playoffs.
You got to get to the playoffs. And they need some more players to step up and play some hockey. And you got to keep these two guys happy. That's the other part of the truth is you can't find good line mates for McDavid. Well, you better give him.
That's the thing. You got nothing on the wings. Then you got to put your good players together. I mean, in a perfect world, you would have six good wingers, and you could put all three of the centers on their own lines, and then you'd be sailing. But we're about five good wingers short of six good wingers.
Yeah, so that will please those two players, I think, to hear the coach saying that.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else stick out for you, Bruce?
Well, one of the things that the question came up about assistant coaches, and Tippett himself said that he wasn't going to make any decisions of bringing in new people until he talked to the guys that were already here to see if there was already a fit. So that seemed like a wise sort of patient approach to. So that's why they didn't announce a whole staff all at once. The guy was here on his first day and he's already going to say, okay, Gulitsyn, you're gone, or, you know, whatever. Chances are very high indeed that entire assistant coaching staff will not be back, but maybe one of them will be. I'm personally hoping Manny Viveros sticks around. I like him as a coach.
I keep hearing he's the young guy, but Manny Viveros is as old as all.
He's 52 years old. Yeah. Gulitsyn, I think, is the young one.
Yeah.
Anyway, they've got, there will be changes there, but the other thing was what Ken Holland said. When they asked him about assistant coaches, and he said, well, that's going to be Dave Tippett's decision. Their coaches are going to be in the, they're going to be in the trenches together. They, you know, I'm going to give Tippett the lead in hiring him. But then he said, but I have to rubber stamp it. And I thought, oh, yeah, rubber stamp. That sounds great. But then he went into detail as to what the rubber stamp was. And it sounded as though whoever Dave Tippett hired, he would have to run past Holland, like, in detail, the strengths of the guy, why they hired him, what job he was going to do. The example that he used was Mike Babcock trying to hire assistants in Detroit, and just kind of running the gauntlet of cross-examination from the manager, giving him the responsibility, but also giving him the responsibility to explain why he was spending the owner's money on this guy and what the guy was going to bring to the team. It sounded like a good, strong boss who knows how to delegate authority while still maintaining the hammer. And so I kind of like the Holland's experience kind of shone through to me in that comment.
And maybe Shirelli did that too, but good for Holland for communicating that, right? Like, mm-hmm. telling people, here's the process. Like, here, this is the process. This is mm-hmm. what happens. And mm-hmm. so people have more confidence then that the managers, because there's, you know, everyone's worried about the hiring process in Edmonton. That became a big issue, right? Because mm-hmm. Nicholson was so lax in terms of hiring a GM last time. He didn't go through a proper process. when he hired Shirelli. And so good for Holland recognizing maybe this is a bit of an issue and he's going to address it.
Or when Dallas Eakins got brought on board, but he got told that the existing assistant coaches, Steve Smith and Kelly Buckberger, would still be his assistant coaches, and he really had no say in picking his own staff. Like, that didn't work.
And they brought him on board because they liked the cut of his jib in an interview. Like, it was like, you know.
Yeah, it was. Anyway, the idea that Tippett's going to have a say in changing over some of the coaching staff, or even all of it, but he's answerable up the line to it, it makes sense. And it's not like Dave Tippett's a raw rookie either. I mean, he knows what he wants and what kind of staff he wants to put together.
So, Bruce, Tippett was also asked about analytics. And this is kind of a raw issue in Edmonton, because Edmonton, the Oilers fan base, is kind of like a hotbed of hockey analytics and has been so for more than a decade. More than any other fan base, and a number of people have actually been hired out of the fan base.
Out of the Oilogosphere, yeah. A bunch of them are working for real NHL teams for real money.
So this is a sore spot with some fans. And I don't know if what Tippett said will make fans happy or sad, but here's what he said, because he was asked about it. And he said he's been in analytics since he was, what's that old country?
1995, Western? Yeah.
Like, okay. Country before country was cool. He liked analytics before analytics were cool. 1995, he was doing it.
And so he was doing it before you guys were talking about it.
He's telling the truth. Mm-hmm. There's been a huge amount of hockey analytics in the NHL since Roger Nielsen started it in the late 1970s with the Leafs. And it's all been basically based on Roger Nielsen's system. And so Tippett was asked about it, and what he described was essentially he's doing Roger Nielsen's system for evaluating, breaking down videotape after the game. And here's his quote. He's asked, what is your favorite analytic? And he said, the one you always go back to for me is scoring chances for and against. I have different rankings for scoring chances, how they happen, quality of them, and exactly who was involved in them. You'd end up getting a real true plus minus. I've collected this data for a long time. It's really interesting to see. And I've made some decisions on them. And then he kind of detailed, I think what he was saying is that there was an old veteran KG defenseman with a great defensive reputation, but when they ran the numbers, they found that this young fast skating kid out of college hockey in the USA was actually the better defender because he kept the puck out of their zone much more effectively by moving the puck. So Bruce, what did you make of that comment from Tippett?
Well, my first takeaway from it is that Staples is really going to like this comment. Because you've been pounding the Nielsen drum for a long time, David, and basically what he said was right down the alley of what you and what we've been doing at the Cult of Hockey now for a decade of monitoring individual contributions to scoring chances, which are a big part of the heart of the game. Obviously, there's way more to analytics than that, but that's one area certainly to investigate. I think as the science evolves, you need someone who's evolving with it. I mean, I hope that he's not stuck in 1995, but nothing that he said really gave me that impression.
What I liked about it, Bruce, is I think what Nielsen's great insight was twofold, that it's really important not just to study goals, but also to study scoring chances. Because there's not a heck of a lot of difference between a lot of scoring chances and a lot of goals. It comes down to puck luck. And the other big insight from Nielsen is you in terms of rating the players, you just can't give everyone on the ice a plus if they're on for a goal or a scoring chance. You actually have to dig in deep and find out who made those contributions. So I think that conceptually Nielsen nailed it in terms of what really is important in hockey. And or one of the things that's really important in hockey, and I personally think the most important thing to study when you're rating hockey players. So Tippett's right on board with that. He's got, and listen, all kinds of NHL coaches have been doing this work for decades. Dave King, I bet you Tippett learned this from Dave King. Claire Drake, Billy Moores of the Oilers, like people have been doing this for a long time, breaking down the videotape and doing the Nielsen method on it. I've been doing it since 2010-11 with the Oilers, and you and Jonathan came on a year ago, and now it's me and you who are doing the work. So we see some value in it, obviously. But I agree, Bruce. Like, so this shows that Tippett knows what to study in terms of hockey. He knows something that's really important. But they're going to be putting these chips in players' uniforms, and I think in the puck.
Right.
And they're going to need someone who's an expert in artificial intelligence.
They're going to need someone,
in terms of like getting video, using video, having a computer look at video and breaking out analytics from, like, because you can't watch all the games probably. That's not going to happen. Although some people like Jonathan Chayka in Arizona created a company that does watch all the games and breaks down everything that happens in all these games. But I think AI and I'm not sure what the right word is for video recognition of pattern recognition of plays.
Right.
They are going to need an expert. NHL teams are going to need. And the interesting thing is a lot of the guys that came out of like the Corsi movement, so to speak, aren't experts at AI or video pattern recognition. Like that's not their area either. I think the next wave of hockey analytics personally is going to come from, you know, it's going to be some guy from Latvia who knows something about hockey, but is over here at the U of A studying AI at our world leading facility and is hired by the Oilers to do this work. And that's what I think they need to get into because Tippett's work is good for analyzing your own team.
Right.
But you need to analyze every game in every league. And the only way you're going to be able to do that is through video pattern recognition. And that's just a word I'm making up on the spot. I don't know what the exact word is, but essentially it's having a computer look at the video of a scoring chance or key plays in hockey and ascertain who did what, who gets 2+ marks and who gets 2-minus marks from that. And then an AI doing the same thing, taking all those results and figuring out what are the really important results out of that. So I don't know if the owners are going to go in that direction. I certainly hope that they do and get ahead of the curve this time.
Yeah, I was just going to say basically words to that effect. It'd be nice to be out in front of it.
Because I don't think any teams are very good at this. I think there is some video analysis going on. I think this has been going on. Doesn't Sport Logique, is that the name of the company out of Montreal?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does this kind of thing. So I think this kind of thing is happening. Right.
But with the chips, that's what's going to change. And that's not even video analysis, it's data analysis. And it's going to be big time number crunching, but trying to make sense of what those numbers mean, you know. Yeah.
And it's not just like, well, he was traveling at 27 miles an hour on average this year, and now he's down to 24. I mean, that's the obvious thing you're going to get, right? Like, is the speed of the players. And that's useful. But I think it's going to be far more interesting and involved than that and go far beyond anything, you know. You know, we're doing our you know, manual checking, and it's really just a way for us to get deeper into the game and the information. Some people think it's useful, others don't. But I think it helps us understand the Oilers better. I think it helps us do that. But what they're going to, this next wave is going to, it's going to be pretty fantastic. And it's going to be all black box stuff, I think. Yeah. Fans aren't going to know what they're finding out. The deep insights they're going to get about the hockey and about players. But so anyway, is he open to that? We don't know. Are the Oilers open to that? Ken Holland? We don't know. But that's the question someone should be asking.
Right.
And if we got a chance, maybe we'll, one of these days we'll get an interview.
Well, the one area where I'm maybe on a slightly different page from you, I value the individual contribution stuff, but I also value the on-ice stuff. And the case I'll make is that the defenseman you described, Tippett talked about the defenseman that didn't have the puck in his own zone a lot. Maybe individually on scoring chances, when the puck was in his own end, he got torched a little bit, but because he spent a lot of time not there, how the team did when he was on the ice, it might show up more on the on-ice numbers than in the individual. So to me, it's a combination of both that you can value.
I think, Bruce, that the new data is really going to be individualized. They're going to be going in on individual players and looking at discrete individual actions of players, and that's going to be the focus. I mean, I think we've looked at team numbers because we've had to, honestly, and that's what we've had to work with. But when you can get solid evaluation of individual action through a machine combined with human hockey knowledge, that's the future of analytics, I'm guessing. But
I got a chip that measures heart and grit and poise. That's going to be an important one.
If they did for the Cult of Hockey Burst, it would be off the freaking charts. 10 years of, or 13 years of crap. This blog started in 2007 and we're still at it, man. So,
yep. Well, I know we wrote about playoff games that 1 year.
And so are all the fans who listen, like everyone, the faithful who listen to this, and, you know, and they really are.
Thanks.
And we talk to them all the time on Twitter, right? Like they are our friends now and they are the faithful, and like we're all in this. So that chip would be off the charts for all of us.
Well, the chip is on the shoulder of many of us. Be nice to lose that.
Yeah. All right. Are we done? Anything else from Tippett?
Well, I think the next thing that's going to fall is the makeup of the full coaching staff. And I would anticipate that's a few days, a week or more away yet while they evaluate and get their ducks in a row. But we're definitely in that season where guys are looking to either secure their current position or to move on. It's not fair to guys to leave them hanging and then say you're gone, sorry, when other things. So we've already heard Trent Yanni maybe looking at Los Angeles to team up with Todd McClellan. That's one of those things, it's just sort of hearsay, because it would be actual tampering if Todd McClellan had talked to Trent Yanni when he's under contract to the Oilers. But you know how these rumors get out there in the ether, and then oftentimes they actually happen. So,
Bruce, they did get rid of one assistant coach, Paul Coffey.
Oh, yes.
Skills coach. And, you know, apparently he was, and it's hard to evaluate for you or I. We don't know the extent of the work he was doing. We do know he wasn't with them full time, either in Bakersfield or in Edmonton.
Not even close, apparently.
And he was an Edmonton old boy. So that news went over very, very, very well. And, you know, I have interviewed Paul Coffey at length. What a smart, very smart, committed guy. I was really impressed by him in terms of his hockey knowledge. Like he just, I'm not on this crap all over the Oilers.
In theory, it wasn't the worst idea, but in practice, the optics were poor in that he was an old boy.
Yeah.
And the story was he was getting paid $500K to be a part-time coach, which probably wouldn't sit too well with a lot of people, including a lot of fans. And when the team is watching its shekels, watching its nickels and dimes on the staffing front, apparently, you know, with ticket agents and ushers and so on, that the budget's tightening up a bit. That seemed to be a bit of an extravagant expense to have a part-time skills coach that only showed up apparently quite rarely.
Yes.
At that kind of point.
We'll sell Tippett and the owner's management all of our Nielsen numbers from 2010 to 11 for 1/10 the amount that Coffey made in one season. All right, Bruce, let's leave it there. Thanks for talking.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.